Round Rock High School? The GK-12 Associates? And all the rest of these amazing... How many people were amazed by what they saw out there? Let's thank everyone who did those amazing things. And if you thought that was all amazing, you're in for a treat tonight. We have a lot of schools here. Austin area homeschoolers. A force to be reckoned with. Blackland Prairie Elementary School. Laurel Mountain Elementary School. Yes. Round Rock High School again. If you do it a third time, you have to stand and bow. And thanks to Domino's for donating the pizza for our hardworking volunteers, to the staff of the Environmental Science Institute. This may seem like a lot of fun and kind of easy stuff to do, but it's actually pretty hard to get this all together. So I want to thank the hardworking staff and volunteers who did all of this, and especially Melinda, who's somewhere in this room, who is the puppet master who pulls all of this together. Thank you for that. Thank you. If you have a seat next to you that's open, you know it's open, please raise your hand. There are some people coming in who are looking for seats. So please come and have a seat. We can't stand in the aisles because the fire marshal may come. And we already have strong representation from public safety here tonight. I also want to pay special thanks to the KDK Harmon Foundation, which is supporting our new program, Ciencias Calientes, which is a Spanish-language version of Hot Science Cool Talks. Thank you, KDK. And here's a question. How can I help ensure the future of Hot Science Cool Talks? Why would one need to worry about ensuring the future of Hot Science Cool Talks? How many people have come to this more than once? How many people really like coming to this? Okay, well, let me tell you a really, really short story. It's not even a story. I'll just tell you some stuff. Basically, at the University of Texas, you might hear that, well, you know, the downturn in the economy, the university is facing some hard times and whatnot, but the university is not going anywhere, right? If zombies took over the earth, the University of Texas would still be here. It would still be offering classes in calculus and chemistry and, of course, the 6 units you need to graduate in Texas government, engineering courses. Those would all be offered because that's part of the institution. However, programs like Hot Science Cool Talk are not part of the normal fabric of the institution. They're special. They're extra. And so, therefore, they don't have the same guarantee of this long-term support program. So in that respect, we really appreciate support from you guys. And there's lots of ways you could do it. You could follow us online, any of these choices. You want to do more than that. Of course you do. You can make a donation to the ESI table on your way out. You could address a message to giving@esi.utexas.edu. And in the subject line, just say, send me info on how to give. And it would be really great if we could blow up that mailbox. So this would be the only time you could use your portable electronic devices tonight, would be to send a message there. Otherwise, please turn off your devices after you send that message. A reminder, there's no conversations during the lecture, and the program has a Q&A. We're beginning now, and we'll end at 8:15. Amazing. This is the 93rd Hot Science Cool Talks, Drones, Myths, Facts, Hacks in the Future. You're applauding the fact that Hot Science Cool Talks exists. I love that, and that it's been around for 93 of them. And tonight, really, really special treat. We have Professor Todd Humphreys, who directs the UT Radio Navigation Laboratory, and he's going to tell you some amazing things about himself and about the work that he does. Please welcome Dr. Humphreys.
Nearly 100,000 football fans gathered in the UT football stadium this August to watch the season opener, the Longhorn season opener. But they were having trouble concentrating on the game because they were distracted by an unidentified flying object looming overhead, blinking red and blue lights. And this wasn't some close encounter with extraterrestrials. It turned out that the object was a drone, an unidentified flying object, except that it was just an unmanned aerial vehicle. And the police were alarmed because that drone might be up to no good. So they went out after the drone operator, and when they finally found him, they put him in handcuffs, threw him in the cruiser, and took him down to the station. And he must have been alarmed. He must have been surprised at this harsh treatment, because all he wanted to do was to watch the game through the video on his drone. So this is the stadium, as you might have imagined it that night. And this is what has happened ever since. At the University of Texas, we've been long interested in unmanned aerial vehicles, or drones, but since that game in August, our interest has turned to alarm, as you can see reflected here in the cover of the alumni magazine. It says, "The drones are here. Our lives will never be the same." I'm going to run with that theme tonight for my cool talk. Indeed, the drones are here, and yes, our lives will never be the same. But what are drones? Well, drones can fly in any different direction, and they're packed with sensors that enable fantastic feats of aerodynamic and navigation. And some people worry that drones may be weaponized, may be turned into weapons. But that's really quite silly, because drones don't even have a stinger. They're the least of the bees. And it turns out that compared to the female worker bee, they don't do much. They have a reputation for being lazy. They mostly just stay around at home and hang out with the queen bee. Or maybe they watch TV or play Minecraft. Anyhow, I know these aren't the drones you're looking for. But I thought I'd throw this nature picture into the talk, because this talk is sponsored by the Environmental Science Institute. But enough with nature. Let's go on to these drones. This one is a magnificent stealth surveillance vehicle that can stay aloft for hours and can be controlled from half a world away. Or maybe you're interested in this drone, which you can buy on Amazon for about $1,300. It's a very popular drone, and you can fly it all around your neighborhood. Or if you're looking for something smaller, perhaps it's this drone. It's a hand-sized drone. Or even smaller, this one, which is not much bigger than a coin. Or this one. Ah, but then again, we're back to the nature photos. In any case, there are many different kinds of drones. And you might say, but drone technology has been around a long time. And that's true. Ever since the early 1900s, we've had aircraft that could fly by themselves. This is a good example of early drone technology. It was the V-1 flying bomb from World War II. The Germans launched a bunch of these against London. And it shares a lot of similarity with the drones that we have today. It had a guidance system with gyroscopes and even a radio transmitter inside. But there were some important differences. First of all, it couldn't be remotely controlled from the ground controllers. Once it was sent off on its course, it was destined to that course. And so we had to wait another 50 years before drone technology really took off. There were three key technologies that kind of came together in the late 1990s to enable drones. And I'd like to talk about these each in turn. First of all was the lithium-ion battery. This was a fantastic technology. The first one was commercialized in 1991, and the lithium-ion battery had twice the energy in half the weight, or twice the energy density, so twice the energy in the same amount of weight. And it was smaller too, more compact than the leading batteries of the time, and could be made more cheaply. In fact, ever since that introduction in 1991, things have gotten even better. It's more efficient today. The University of Texas at Austin had a role to play in the development of the lithium-ion battery. Our engineering professor, John Goodenough, was just this year, in 2014, was given the Draper Prize, which amounts to the Nobel Prize in engineering, for his groundbreaking work in developing these lithium-ion batteries. So yes, drones need batteries. They need them to be light and have high energy density. but they also need brains. And thankfully, since the early 1960s, Moore's Law has enabled drone brains to develop more compactly than we had ever imagined. On the lower right, you see an iPhone, which happens to be 100 times faster and 100 times smaller than this early computer from the 1980s. Not only that, but it's 10 times cheaper to boot when you count for inflation. So we rode Moore's Law and were able to develop drone brains that were not only smart, but small, which was one of the other features that came together in the late 1990s. And finally, the last key element for drones came about very suddenly. It was in the early morning hours of May 2nd, 2000. U.S. President Bill Clinton that morning switched off a special circuit on the orbiting satellites of the Global Positioning System, GPS. And instantaneously, GPS errors across the globe for all civil receivers went from errors the size of a football field to errors the size of a small room. And this mattered a great deal for drones because errors of 50 to 100 meters would be simply unacceptable for flying drones. But 1 to 3 meters, that's pretty nice. So these three technologies, the batteries, the compact computational power, and precision GPS, they brought about the rise of drones. They allowed them to take off. But I should mention one other technology that has brought about, I guess, the fun part of having one of these drones, and that is digital cameras. Digital cameras nowadays are light, they're cheap, and they are amazingly high in resolution. And just about every drone today has one. So you might say, well, there are many different ways I can think about a drone. That's right. A drone is a device of many epithets. You usually can get away with just calling it a drone, but if you're trying to be more sophisticated or you're talking to somebody who sells drones, you should probably call them unmanned aerial vehicles. Or you could call them remotely piloted aircraft. And if you're speaking Spanish, maybe aeronaves pilotadas por control remoto, which is a mouthful. But finally, this last term, autonomous aircraft, now that's a special one. You only get to call a drone an autonomous aircraft if it can really fly with no human at the controls. Of course, no human in the air, but in this case, no human even on the ground at the controls. It flies itself. And that's an autonomous aircraft. Now you might be wondering, okay, lots of great things about drones, but is it even legal to fly one? And the more I think about this, the more I have come to conclude that it's a lot easier to build a drone from scratch than it is to figure out if it's legal to fly one. And this very week, there was introduced a further complication. This piece of legislation, well, it's not legislation. This was the ruling of a panel of judges called on the National Transportation Safety Board. On Tuesday, November 18th, they came out with this ruling. And November 18th happens to be my birthday. And this was a terrible birthday present from the federal government for my birthday. The matter at hand that they were trying to decide was whether the Federal Aviation Administration has the authority to regulate drones. And the way they approached this problem was to ask whether a drone is an aircraft according to the statutes of the FAA. And they decided, unfortunately, to broadly define aircraft. And I mean very broad. So read this language. An aircraft is any device used for flight in the air. This definition includes any aircraft, large or small. The prohibition on careless and reckless operation in this certain Section 91 applies with respect to any aircraft other than kites and balloons. So yes, drones are aircraft. Large drones are definitely aircraft. And even smaller drones, the ones you buy at Amazon, they are aircraft, and they are subject to the FAA regulations. Even hand-sized drones are subject to the regulation. Even coin-sized and even smaller drones are subject to the FAA's regulation. But most absurdly, even paper airplanes are now subject to FAA regulation. And here's the rub. Inside the FAA's own statutes, they tell you that flying an aircraft less than 500 feet is a violation of reckless flying behavior. So you can't fly a drone less than 500 feet. But their guidance for model aircraft is that you shouldn't fly them above 400 feet. So you're stuck somewhere in limbo between those two. And then the federal legislations, I guess I would just say that they are both absurd and inconsistent. So you're adding absurdity and inconsistency. The Texas law is a little bit more straightforward. It simply says that you need your neighbor's consent if you're going to take pictures of your neighbor on their property. And it turns out that my students and I had a little bit of experience helping to write this bill. So there's a nice exception that says, except for professors. So my advice, if you're trying to get all through all of this legal mumbo-jumbo, is the following. Don't fly near airports. Stay away from airports by about 4 or 5 miles. Stay under 400 feet. Don't fly for hire. Don't accept money to fly a drone. And don't take any close-up pictures of people without their consent. And finally, don't scare anybody. And you'll just be fine flying drones. So you might ask, what would I ever do with a drone with all of this legal mumbo-jumbo hanging over the flight of drones? What would I ever do with it? Well, let me tell you my three favorite ideas for what you might do with a drone. First of all, you can take pictures from a vantage point that you never imagined possible and would be truly impossible without flying a drone. And secondly, you can do aerial mapping, three-dimensional aerial mapping down to decimeter accuracy. I've always been enchanted by maps, and the idea of making one from a drone is really great fun to think about. And the third thing you can do with drones, three. So we had the mapping, we had the first one, the second one. It's not the Department of Energy. What is the third? What's that? I didn't hear it? Oh, Department of Energy, it kind of is. Yeah, it's kind of that moment. I left a notebook here, so maybe it's back here. Maybe my notes are here. I mean, I just wrote it on a piece of paper. So I'm sure, what? No, it's in here. Yeah, my note paper is surely in here. I know, but there are a lot of good applications. I just didn't want to get the wrong one. What? Oh my goodness. Wow, that's like a UFO from the football game. Look at that. What has it got? You say it has a message? Oh. That's right. I'll bet that's where my third idea is. Being carried by the drone. Look at that. Oh, look. It's coming in for a landing. Whoa. Well, you're right. It does have a message here. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Delivery by drone. That's the third application. Well, thank you, Mr. Drone. Go on back to headquarters now. Everybody say goodbye to the drone. Adios. Stay under 400 feet. Stay away from the football games. So now, where were we? We were talking about applications of drones, right? And the first one is that you can take footage, video footage or pictures, from vantage points you've never thought imaginable. Take a look at this. Have you ever thought of seeing a fireworks show from inside the fireworks? This drone operator from Florida just this summer decided to fly through the fireworks and capture all of this on video. It's pretty remarkable, especially when these things come blowing up right beside him. Then this one was a brave drone operator who decided to fly a drone right into a volcano. And this also happened just months ago. The drone in this case really was in mortal danger of its life and came back singed. The camera was melted all to pieces, but the footage was preserved. So yes, you can take amazing video with these drones. As I said, also, you can do map making, cartography. This is a three-dimensional map of a quarry that was done by taking pictures from a drone and figuring out where the pictures were taken from and piecing them all together in three dimensions. And you can do a topographical map with this so that you can really prove to yourself you've got three-dimensional mapping. So if a two-dimensional map, the kind that you used, you know, fold out in the car, is fun, well, three-dimensional maps are even more fun. And like I said, the last application, delivery by drone, which our brave drone tonight demonstrated for us handily. So now I'd like to get onto the question of whether drones can be hacked. And this is something that my students and I have some expertise in. Did anybody see Interstellar yet? Okay, you remember the part at the very beginning where they're chasing down that Indian army drone? And what do they do with it? They hack it so they can bring it down. And that's precisely the kind of hacking that I'm talking about. An attack where you take control of the drone even though the drone's rightful operator might not like you to. Now, this isn't just the stuff of science fiction. In fact, it has happened in real life. In December of 2011, the U.S. military lost a drone over Iran. They lost it. It went missing. It was gone for about a week. And nobody talked about it. Nobody could say where it was. Then the Iranians claimed in newspapers that they had the drone. And the U.S. military said, oh, that's nonsense. The drone went down because of a malfunction, and it's just a pile of rubble now. But the Iranians insisted that they had the drone, and it looked pretty bad for the U.S. military when the Iranians came on state television and showed that they had the drone. And in fact, they had it intact, so it hadn't come down in a pile of rubble. Later on, the Christian Science Monitor sent a journalist into Iran to ask questions. And this journalist asked one of the engineers who had claimed to have brought this down, what did you do to bring it down? And the engineer said it was an electronic attack against the drone's GPS. So it was a so-called spoofing attack. A counterfeit signal was sent up there to try to guide the drone down. That's what the Iranians were claiming. So about this time, my phone started to ring quite a bit because journalists from across the world were calling to find out if the Iranian story was credible. And why were they calling me? Well, because my students and I happened to be doing research in this very area. And in fact, I had begun work on this before I even came to UT. I'd been puzzled about GPS spoofing and all the things that you could do against an aircraft. This is the kind of basic idea that I'm talking about. These drones happen to have some vital links. The link to the ground operator is one of those vital links. The links to the GPS satellites above, that's another vital link. And the links to other aircraft in the sky could be considered a third vital link. So in any of these cases, if you can take over those links and pretend that you're the ground controller or pretend that you're the satellites, you can take over the drone. And this was the question that these reporters were asking me. Could the Iranians really have done what they claimed to do? And the truth was, I wasn't sure. But several years before, I had asked the same question in general about GPS, whether you could falsify the global positioning system signals. And in fact, on one weekend, while we were living in California before I came to the University of Texas, we spent some time building a GPS spoofing device. And there's a picture of my son, Ramon, and I spending the week together building that device. And Ramon is here. He's a little bit older now. At the time, this was just a jumble of cables and wires, but we eventually got it packaged up into a nice small box. My students, when I came to the University of Texas, helped me a great deal to put this together. So we had some expertise, but we still didn't quite know if it would be possible to bring down a drone. But my students and I got together and started to think, exactly what would it take to make a stealthy attack against a drone? And we drew a picture like this on a piece of paper. And after we had done all of the calculations, which, after all, only required about ninth grade geometry. So next time you're in your geometry class and you ask the teacher, where am I ever going to use this? The teacher might respond, well, you could hijack a drone with that geometry. And so you'll pay more attention. We found out after we did our analysis that it wasn't going to be all that hard. We just had to make sure that we knew exactly what the delays were through the box and all of the geometrical delays so that our signals would land at the helicopter, the true helicopter, at just the right phasing to be convincing to the helicopter. And then we could make the helicopter believe that it was somewhere else. So then we got on the phone to the Department of Homeland Security and we said, hey, we've got something in mind. And they said, what have you got in mind? And we said, what would you think if we said we could bring down a drone like the Iranians claimed? And there was silence on the other end of the phone. And after a while, he came back and said, I think we're going to allow this. And we were pretty much floored by their response because we didn't think there was a snowball's chance that they would let this go forward. Not only did they let it go forward, they arranged for us to have the support of a whole flight squadron out at White Sands, and they allowed us to do the test at White Sands. But they said, you have to bring your own drone and your own manpower. Well, manpower, my students are the manpower. But we had to buy a drone, and we wanted this to not look like a toy. We wanted it to look credible. So we went and got one that is sold to the military or to police. And we specifically told them, don't put any UT logos on this drone because the athletics department, the one with the big longhorns, they jealously guard their athletics logo, and you can't just throw it on things without paying a royalty to the athletics department or something like that. Turns out the guy was a UT football fan, and he promptly disregarded our advice. But it was okay. The athletics department never came after us and haven't to this day. So we took this drone and we decided we better practice before we go down to White Sands and do it in front of the Department of Homeland Security and in front of the Air Force Test Squadron. So we decided to practice in the football field. And this was the most miraculous thing of all. They moved early morning football practice to allow us to be in the stadium. And I've got a little video for how this might have looked. This looked at the time. Let's see if I can play it for you. So, that's our drone, an animation of our drone, flying there in the air, and the little white figure represents the drone's operator. He's sending commands up to the drone to say, hey, move toward that white pulsing waypoint. The drone figures out where it is using the global positioning system, tracks its position, and knows where the waypoint is, and then it just closes the distance between it and the waypoint using an autopilot. And it's that easy. That's how it's supposed to work in practice. But what happens if some bad guy, painted here in red, comes into the picture? And this bad guy can broadcast signals that look very much like GPS signals, so that when they arrive at the helicopter, they creep up on the tracking points that you can see there in this cartoon. They creep up on the tracking points, and then they rise up in power and hijack those tracking points inside the GPS receiver. As they move, now you see a ghost helicopter moving out the back. The ghost is now where the UAV thinks it is. So when its autopilot now tries to close the distance between it and the waypoint, it isn't the helicopter that lines up on the waypoint, it's the ghost. Yeah. So we did this in the football stadium. This was just 2 years ago. My student Daniel and Jashan were there. And we had the drone hovering in midair. And we just told it, you're rising upward. And in response, its autopilot system decided, I better compensate by coming downward. And so it did. It came right down toward the football field and would have crashed if our safety pilot hadn't caught it. So just days later, we went down to do the official test in front of the Department of Homeland Security. This one we did over the air from about a half a mile away. The drone again was hovering in the air. You can see me here and the safety pilot on my right. And Daniel and Jashan were up. They made it think it was hovering and going up, and it came down toward the pitch. And that was all the Department of Homeland Security needed to see. And they were convinced, yes, that this could have happened, and it could even have happened with the Iranian drone. Unfortunately, it's a lot easier to crash these drones than to control them. And this is what happened about a year after those experiments. I remember what I said to my students just before this happened. It was something like, "Oh, guys, that worked really well. Let's do this one more aggressively." So it kind of reminds me of that old redneck joke where, what are the redneck's last words? "Hey, Hal, watch this." So that was the last words before the drone went down. We put it back together, though. Humpty Dumpty doesn't just stay cracked on the ground. We put it back together, spent many thousands of dollars, finally. And then it crashed on the very first flight after we put it back together. The trouble is, this kind of research is risky research. You might think, okay, what does a drone have to do with a super yacht like this? Well, it turns out that after all of this rigmarole with the drones, I was giving a presentation at South by Southwest on how we can hack drones and how the global positioning system is not terribly secure. And a very distinguished-looking English gentleman came up to me afterward, and he handed me his card, and he said, "How would you like to go after bigger prey?" And I said, "Well, what do you have in mind?" And he said, "I'm the captain of the White Rose of Drax." And I wasn't terribly impressed, because who knows what the White Rose of Drax is. 2 months later, my wife, my students, and I were on the White Rose of Drax. And this is an $80 million, 213-foot super yacht that goes around the Mediterranean, and whose owner happens to be an amateur scientist and likes to lend his super yacht to be hacked by research criminal types. So there we were, and the captain challenged us to go ahead and try to hack his boat. And this was quite an undertaking, you see, because it has two GPS antennas on top and two GPS receivers on the inside, so there's plenty there to hack. Let me see if I can show a video of what this might have looked like. We call this spoofing on the high seas. We were there in what's called the Ionian Sea, just off the boot of Italy. You see, you can't broadcast these signals over the air unless you have special permission or if you're in international waters. So we were in international waters. Here's Captain Andrews, and this is the trajectory we were going on just off the coast of Italy. They were, of course, making precise trajectories and planning them beforehand so that we could avoid any underwater hazards or shoals. At this point, when we're out at sea, deep at sea, the only thing these large watercraft can do to determine their location is listening to GPS signals, because the older technology has been deprecated. So there's the White Rose, and there's my student Jashan, who's here in the audience tonight. Myself, Captain Andrew, and his friend. There's Jashan from the upper deck. He likes to joke, "I'm the captain now." And indeed he was. When we were down on the deck, we called up and said, "Jashan, you can begin your attack now." And he said, "I've been attacking you for the last 5 minutes. You've already moved off." The basic idea is that here's Jashan sending out a signal that looks like GPS signals and corrupting the incoming GPS signals. This is proof that we did what we claimed. We were 415 meters below the surface of the ocean, which is quite a feat. And there were no alarms on the bridge, the radio, or the radar, the gyro compass, and the magnetic compass. None of these were alarmed because we were doing a stealth attack, trying to keep under what the currents in the ocean might have done. We didn't push him off by a lot, just a little bit, maybe 3 degrees, and we created the sensation in the onboard equipment that they were moving to port. And in response, they turned to starboard to align the ship back up where they thought it should be. And at this point, they were under our control. The $80 million yacht under our control. And this is it's an interesting view off the aft deck. I'll go to back to the presentation. this interesting view off the aft deck. My wife actually took this picture. It's a great picture because you see that bend in the wake. That bend in the wake of an $80 million super yacht. That was caused by very faint electronic signals transmitted from a box that originally was homemade. That's a very powerful attack. Now, it doesn't just get limited to drones and to surface vessels on the ocean. There may be a problem also with autonomous vehicles. And this is research that we're working on right now in the University of Texas Radio Navigation Lab. These autonomous vehicles, like this car, which is a new Mercedes S-Class, all depend on so-called long-range radar systems. These radar systems are looking out the front of the car and trying to see other cars in front of them. But very much like GPS signals, the waveforms used in these radar signals are not encrypted and they're not authenticated. So it might be possible, though we haven't proven it yet, to point a ray gun at a car like this and make it stop in its tracks, because Mercedes has decided to wrap a control loop around this Mercedes S-Class such that if it sees something that will crash, it will crash with, inevitably, it will apply the brakes no matter what the driver is doing. So I know you're all quite worried because most of you do have a Mercedes S-Class vehicle. But don't dismiss this, because this technology is working its way down through Hyundai and Saab and other manufacturers, and it'll be all pervasive through the market. So our question now is to figure out if this is also vulnerable like GPS. And I should point out that all of our research in this area isn't just for hacking fun. We like to poke holes in things and find vulnerabilities, but our real job is to figure out how we can fix it. And we have been working, my students and I, for several years to figure out how we can patch the vulnerability in GPS. We'd like to also patch the vulnerability in these autonomous cars so that you can all feel safe when you get into your first autonomous car and sit behind the wheel and don't touch the wheel, even if it's there. Last thing I'd like to ask is whether drones like to play sports. And I'd like to make the claim that yes, they like to play sports. We tried it out this summer for the first time. We took a few drones out to the football field. Here you can see Mickey and some other students who were visiting that day. We took a few drones out to the football field, and we began playing Pong with those drones. Does anyone know what Pong is? So I see you've had your 40th birthday too. Pong has two paddles and a puck. And we have in mind to make a drone a paddle, a drone a paddle, and a drone a puck, and then to simulate the physics of the interaction between the paddles and the pucks. And we were quite successful with this summer. Here's one of the students controlling the drone using just a tablet. We imagine this could have lots of applications, but maybe it could become, ultimately, a spectator sport. You can see here the Pong field superimposed on the football field. So yes, I think drones do like to play sports. And we've got big plans for these so-called machine games. We'd eventually like to make the drones have centimeter accuracy in their positioning so that they can do exquisite maneuvering and have squads of drones playing against each other. Maybe they'll use artificial intelligence to play against each other. Maybe they'll play against a human-driven squad and find out if the machines can best the humans at, say, capture the flag or Quidditch or something along those lines. Ultimately, we hope that maybe they will not only move football practice, but maybe a football game so that we can have the stadium and bring in people who will pay ticket money just to come and see the drones play against each other. It'll be the inauguration of the mechanical athletics department at the University of Texas. So finally, the question of whether we can live peaceably with drones, I'm quite certain that we can. They like to play sports. We like to play sports. They like to not get their systems interfered with. We don't like to interfere with other people's systems either. And I'm quite sure that just as this photo proves, you can have a picnic on a nice green field with smiles all around, even if the drones are looming menacingly above. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm happy to take questions, as long as you've got them. Do you want to run this, or? Okay. Well, you, ma'am. I have seen, so she's asking whether they've ever tested throwing a drone through a jet engine, a live jet engine as it's running. I have seen tests where they throw a frozen chicken through a jet engine. Yes, and it doesn't come out well for the chicken. But I don't know if they've done it with drones. And the truth is, you know, the frozen chicken can be quite damaging for the jet engine, so they've done that before, destructive testing. And I think it would be wise to do it with a drone. The trouble is, you know, you've got all these different sizes. At some point, there's a drone that, if it gets gobbled up, it'll bring the jet engine down. Yes, it's Hayden, right? Yeah, so he's asking. Ooh. Hayden's asking about a 9/11 scenario. Could you spoof a manned airplane? So this airplane has people on board? I see. Well, I'll tell you, our box sends out electromagnetic waves, radio waves. And those radio waves usually can't change the minds of people, or else I would have used it on my wife long ago. But they can change what the instruments in the cockpit tell the pilot. And if the pilot is following his or her instruments, maybe that pilot will be fooled. And I will tell you that the aircraft GPS receivers, the ones they use routinely and all over the United States and all over the world, are vulnerable to GPS spoofing, just like all of the GPS attacks that we showed here. The only ones that are not vulnerable are the military receivers, which have special encryption. But we're working with the GPS Directorate of the Air Force to put special watermarks in the signals that come down from the overhead satellites so that nobody can spoof even the aircraft, commercial aircraft. And if we're successful with this over the next 2 years, I think, this will be a big deal, because it was a paper that an early student of mine wrote, Kyle Wesson, and another student of mine, Andrew Kearns, wrote another paper following up on that. And these got the papers found their way into the hands of the GPS Director of the Air Force, and now they might implement them on the overhead satellites, and then what starts here changes the world. Yes, sir. Have you ever tried making a drone that cannot be hacked? I haven't tried it, but the agency that the government calls DARPA, which is an agency that does spooky things that nobody really wants to talk about, that agency has paid some researchers who have claimed that they built an unhackable drone. So I contacted these researchers and I said, well, did you fix the GPS? And they said, no. So not quite unhackable yet. I do think that some military variants are getting fairly close to that. But it's a really challenging thing to prevent hacking on a drone. Yeah? Yeah, well, we brainstorm about that every once in a while. There's something called benign spoofing, where you can hook your signal from our spoofing box into an unsuspecting receiver and tell it the true coordinates and do this more cleanly than it could do it by itself. And in that case, you might be able to upgrade old equipment by using benign spoofing so that it has higher precision than it might have otherwise. So we tried to do this. We got a patent on it. Then the patent didn't go through. And then nobody really wanted to buy it. So whatever. Benign spoofing doesn't sell. Yes, Aiden. He's asking if you've ever tried to make a drone who could take video for days at a time. I haven't done this, but I saw just recently that they've introduced a new drone which can fly above your house on very small batteries for 12 hours straight, taking video, looking down at your house. And you might say, wait a minute, John Goodenough made those great lithium-ion batteries, but those aren't good enough for 12 hours. And that's true. It turns out the secret to this atom is that they have a monofilament that goes from a power source all the way up some 400 feet to the drone. And it can fly up there for 12 hours on that monofilament. That's maybe one of the first drones that I'd like to have supervising my house. And it turns out also that there's a loophole in the FAA regulations that says that if you've got any kind of filament connecting your drone and the ground, then it's not a drone. It's a balloon. So you can use their inconsistency and absurdity against them. Yes? Oh. He's saying, this is all fine and well, but let's get drones that'll wash the dishes and iron the clothes. I have seen, in fact, drones that build simple structures. If you can imagine Legos, very large blocks of Legos, these drones come in and scoop one up, and they go over and lay it down, and they have it all pre-programmed how they're going to build up this house structure. But that's the most useful thing I've seen a drone build. I haven't, you know, washing dishes is a lot more challenging than it looks. Believe me, I avoid it whenever I can. Yes, back here. Yes. Yeah, Skynet. Wow. They said, watch out for the children's questions here. And they were right. So he's worried about a Terminator-type drone, something that might turn on its inventors and do dastardly things. And what do I think about that? Well, you know what I think? I think that just about every nightmare scenario you can imagine involving drones will probably play itself out over the next 50 years. And I'm quite serious about that. I think they can be used for good and bad, and we'll probably experiment with both of them. I don't think that deep artificial intelligence of the kind that would be required such that a drone could turn on its operators or its inventors and do anything in a sustained way is in the offing anytime soon. I think that kind of deep artificial intelligence might be 30 or 40 years away, and maybe the good Lord will come by then and we'll all just be taken up. So who knows? But it's a long way off. Let's see, there was somebody else, maybe a young girl? Oh, yes, you. How about that? Yes. So this drone, these pictures here from the Alcalde are actually drones that are part of the Aerospace Department of the University of Texas at Austin. Mickey, who's here in the back, had taken them over there with my student Andrew. So there are drones, and they don't go all that high. What would you say, Mickey? We'd never go above 400 feet, he's saying. But if we were to go above 400 feet, I'd say it would probably top out at around 2 or 3,000 feet. The real trick is to get it up and back on one battery charge. Well, you can always get it up on one battery charge. Yes, sir, you in the back. Yeah.
It's more of a political
question. Oh, great. Wow.
And I understand it's a predator search and destroy drone. I could have sworn the war was in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
So what is the agenda here with this?
So I know something about these drones. But my information tells me that they are actually only within 25 miles of the of our southern border here in Texas. You might have other information. But the Border Patrol agency, part of the Department of Homeland Security, has beefed up their border control based on drones. They say, you know, maybe it's not possible to build a fence. Maybe it's not possible to monitor those long stretches with sensors on the ground. And so they've been sending sorties of drones. They've got a fleet of about 10 to maybe 20 of them now. And they're up almost every day in that 25-mile stretch along the border. This House Bill 912 that was passed a year ago has an exception for professors, and it also has an exception for drones that are flying along that part of the Texas-Mexico border. But it says that legislation, House Bill 912, says that other than that, you don't get to fly drones over Austin and take surveillance footage of private citizens on private land. So if it's going on, it's going on in violation of Texas law. Well, everybody ought to have their eyes open then. Yes, sir, you. Yeah. On C. That's right. And you know what? That is exactly the kind of hacking that is done when you take over what's called the command and control link to a drone. So that's the kind of hacking they did on Interstellar to bring down that Indian Army drone. Oh, what a great question. Drones hacking drones. You know what? I did see once what they called a drone hackathon, I think they called it, where they put a bunch of these parrot drones up in the air and they were all trying to hack each other. Some of them just got frustrated and ran into each other. But before that, one of the young men was able to design a transmitter from the drone that would carry the same sort of command and control link that was coming from the handsets, and he did indeed hack one of the other drones. And that's a really crazy idea, but it actually has happened in practice. Another question, let's see. Somebody way back here, the one with the blue or black shirt? Yes. Oh, that's a very good question. If you find out that your drone's been hacked, can you recover from that hack? And the answer is sometimes yes, sometimes no. In the case of the drone that you saw up here that was crashed on the ground, the time after I said, hey guys, let's do that more aggressively, it turns out we tried to turn off the hacking attack about 2 or 3 seconds into the attack. We made the drone move, and then we tried to turn off the attack and tried to tell the drone to ignore GPS, but by that time its fate was already sealed. Its internal sense of its navigation was already so wound up in the wrong direction that it just kept going toward the north and eventually hit the mountain going about 40 miles an hour. Crash! So sometimes it's irrecoverable just slightly after the initial point of attack. Yes, a young lady there with a blue shirt. So, two drones hacking each other at the same time? Yeah, that's quite a choreography there. I suppose it's possible. It's sort of like playing sports against someone else. You've got to have an offense and you've got to have a defense. But I would predict that the two of them would crash pretty soon after they do that. Yes, sir, you with the yellow or the orange shirt? The Hunter orange there, yeah. Yeah.
But with this technology, it's essentially consumer technology. It's not like nuclear essential fuses or chemical warfare. You work with Homeland. Do you have a sense, they have any idea or capability of managing weapons proliferation? Because it could be coming
Yeah, so he's talking about drones involved with weapons proliferation. And I'll tell you what some of the main concerns people have right now is that drones, even though they're small or they might be consumer devices, they can carry a payload into areas that might otherwise be fairly well protected. So the University of Texas police came and talked to me actually before this football game that I told you about, and they said, look, we've got the whole perimeter to the UT football stadium very well secure. We've got the walls secure. We don't let anybody in without having a look at them, and we don't let cars in. But we don't have the top secure. And if a drone comes through down through the top, it might have some chemical agent, maybe a really nasty type of polonium or something that is small and could do a lot of damage. And that's exactly why they got so excited when they saw that drone above the stadium, because they really can't know if it might be carrying some poisonous agent. Well, it's much harder to stop the proliferation of small devices and small kinds of chemicals than for large ones. The UT police actually asked my students and me, hey, what do we do then? And guess what our response was? That came next. I ended up advocating a drone against drone kinetic attack. So you take it down with another drone, because you can't trust that they might be using GPS, so you can't use GPS spoofing for that. Yes, go ahead. From Manor High School.
So Facebook recently bought a massive drone company, and they're talking about having 747-sized drones permanently up to give people Wi-Fi. And I was wondering what you thought about the feasibility of that and likelihood and time frame.
Yeah, so he's talking about giving people across the globe internet access by flying drones overhead that beam down internet signals like Wi-Fi signals or another waveform. Do I think that's credible? Yeah, I do. And I think that it's not just Facebook that's thinking about it. Google has two separate projects on that score. They bought Triton Aerospace, and they also have this Loon project where they're going to send up balloons and do the same thing. And just recently, Elon Musk announced that he wants to put 700 satellites in low Earth orbit to do the same thing. But what about the drone ones? Can they really keep those drones up there for say, several months or maybe even years at a time? I think that's possible. And the key is to make them the size of the 747, but not quite the weight of the 747. Lots of solar panels everywhere, and then they just loiter up there. The real question is whether the winds at 60 or 70,000 feet are going to tear them apart because they're so delicate. And from what I've seen in the data, if you get up to about 70,000 feet, there isn't much wind at all, and you can probably loiter up there for months at a time. So I'm not sure if I'm recommending investing yet, but I think it's a cool idea, and it's easier to put up than satellites. Yes, let's see. Anybody from over here? How about you? So she's asking whether maybe a group of drone sentinels could be used to secure the top of the football stadium. Well, that's basically what I recommended to the UT police. So you and I are on the same wavelength. I thought of a rapid response team that could identify the drones above the stadium by their lights or by the reflection from the stadium lights and then go after them. Maybe it would be fun to go after them with a net and capture them up and take them off. But we're not sure if we could outmaneuver a drone if we were carrying a net. So I'm not sure yet what to do, but I know you'd have to be very fast. Yeah, how about you?
Do you
So he's asking about an AI drone. AI means artificial intelligence. And he's asking whether an AI drone could figure out commands for itself and figure out what to do for itself. In truth, this is what we call an autonomous vehicle, a truly autonomous drone or an autonomous unmanned vehicle. These are the ones that are supposed to make decisions for themselves. Some of these decisions are very simple, like turn left, turn left, turn left, turn left. Now that's a square. Keep turning left. And that's some pre-programmed trajectory that you commanded, and then you've got your hands off the control. That's autonomy. It's a kind of very small autonomy that even a cockroach wouldn't be very proud of. But for more complicated autonomy, for making decisions, for example, about what target to choose when you're homing in on a target, that's also being developed. Lockheed Martin, which is a big aerospace company, has now made these drones that can choose their target once they arrive. So you just tell it the basic vicinity, and as it gets to the target, it chooses between multiple possible targets. And people are really nervous about this because they don't like the idea that a drone might be doing decision-making about what to hit and what not. And I agree, that's a little problematic. Ramon, can you play football with drones? Well, you can certainly play with drones in the football stadium, as we have demonstrated. But playing football wouldn't be all that hard either. You just have to have one drone that acts as the football, and then you have one squad of drones that acts as the offensive team, and one squad as the defensive team. And they, whenever they interact, they don't actually hit. They don't actually come together and smash. Instead, you simulate a force field around every one of the drones so that as their simulated fake force fields come together, they bounce off as if there really were a force field. And that's the kind of physics overlay that we want to put on these machine games. And if we do it, you'll be first to go to those games and watch them, okay? Okay, shall we do a couple of more then? Good. We, long as I have stamina up here. How about you? Can I hack a remote control? The kind of hacking that we were doing here was hacking against the GPS system, so the global positioning system signals. But hacking the remote control is what I've been calling hacking the command and control link, one of the other vital links for a drone. And can you hack it? Well, you can certainly hack it if you've just got a drone that was purchased by off of Amazon. They don't have very well encrypted command and control links. But if you're going after a Predator drone from the military, they've got a very strongly encrypted command and control link that's hard to hack. So if they're cheap, yeah. If they're expensive and military owned, not so much. Yes. Oh, yes, you in the red jacket there.
Two questions.
One, if two drones try to hack one different drone at the same time, which one command will hack? Yeah, so that's kind of like when I tell my son something and my wife tells my son something different. And who has the authority there? Well, The female drone usually wins out. The truth is, what's going to happen is that both of the signals will be arriving at the drone at the same time. And it might see one of them stronger than another signal. And that's usually how it chooses which one to pay attention to, the stronger signal. So you'll really have three signals impinging on the drone. One from its command and control operator on the ground, legitimate operator, and two hacking signals. And whichever one of those is the strongest will probably win, unless there's some encryption, in which case it's just the legitimate one that gets through. Oh, yeah, the second question.
Is it possible to make a drone that is subatomic?
Subatomic. So you mean really, really small?
Yes.
Right. So
you got that one before,
Tom? I haven't ever had that one before. You know what I think is fun? Is that we have a funny naming convention when it comes to drones and spacecraft. There are regular spacecraft, regular satellites, and then there are microsatellites. Now, micro in the metric system means 1 times 10 to the minus 6th, which is 1 millionth of a meter. And then there are nanosatellites, which is much less than that. And then there are femtosatellites and picosatellites. And picosatellites, if you're comparing it with a meter, is down on that atomic scale. But they're really that big, which is a lot more atoms. The same is happening with drones. You've got the big drones, and then you've got the nano drones and the pico drones and the femto drones, but they really haven't made anything at truly atomic scales.
So a final question for Dr. Humphries.
Okay, why don't you pick the final question? I feel biased or something.
You two guys in the blue shirt, if you ask it together, since you're...
Can
Do rock, paper, scissors for who gets this.
I love this recursion. Wow. This is the strength of youth, yes. So, are you imagining that somebody's trying to hack a drone, and somebody else is trying to hack the message that's hacking the drone? I don't know. I'm going to have to look at my students. What do you think? Yeah. There's a special kind of attack called the man-in-the-middle attack, where you get a message from somebody, and then you mess it up a little bit and send it along. And in that case, maybe somebody's hacking the drone, and somebody else is playing the man-in-the-middle attack, and then you've got two hackers and one stream. So I guess it is possible. Never been done before, though.
Oh, that was a great question to end on. Let's thank Dr. Humphreys once again.
Thank you. A lot of fun. Well, thank you for coming, and I sure hope you drive home safely tonight.
You can expect them to come forward for a little bit.